When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I ask anybody's question but yours. You're an idiot. And really, a disloyal person.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Disloyal Idiots Podcast. I'm Christian A. Guzman. Steve and Andy are missing somewhere in the vast wilderness of the internet, so we have the Yinzer replacement, Mike Ostrowski, to help fill in for Andy, to fill in the Pittsburgh void that every Syracuse fan does so desperately needs in their life. Even though it is the Steelers' bye week.
Hey, it's the one week I don't have a heart attack on Sunday, so I'll take it.
You just have a heart attack for every other day of the week now, because Mike is that rare breed of Steelers Phillies fan that, you know, only shows up every once in a blue moon. So he's the one who's suffering now to try and figure out how the Phillies are going to figure out Zach Gallen.
It's called Red October. I'm not worried.
And then figure out how to not blow it against the Astros again, because we all know.
See, that either Texas team does concern me. That's where it gets dicey.
We're doing the usual thing as we do on the Disloyal Idiots podcast, where we talk literally anything about except Syracuse football, because talking about Syracuse football just makes us more and more depressed. Especially after this past week, where Syracuse unfortunately got trounced by Florida State. The final score of, I believe it was 41-3. The reason why I say is believe, because I think like most Syracuse fans, most of us tuned out after the end of the first half or even far before that.
Well, I had the post game and then the AER post game, so I did not have the choice of tuning out this time.
Yeah, no, you were contractually required to, in order to sit through all of this, unfortunately, for your sanity. So, yeah, 41-3 is your final score. Syracuse drops to 4-3 on this season. But the good news, as you can see by the title of this podcast, the gauntlet is finally over. This is what not just all the fans knew, but the team knew as well, was the stretch of the year called the gauntlet. And it was going to be the roughest part of the year, playing against Clemson, UNC, and Florida State. The three toughest opponents on the schedule. And it was going to be surprising if Syracuse came out with a win in any of those. Yes, you would have liked to see the games be a bit more competitive, but it's not surprising that Syracuse lost these games.
No, and going into the start of the season, if you expected Syracuse to win one of these games, I don't know what to tell you. It would have been a great upset if they did. But come on, it's the two teams that will be competing for the ACC championship, UNC and Florida State, and then a Clemson team that, while they were beatable, yes, it's not the greatest Clemson team SU has ever faced. They still played Florida State extremely tight the week before, and they're not a pushover. So the good news is that, like you said, the worst part is over. They have the perfect bye week now. Instead of last season, where you had the bye week right before the gauntlet and you really didn't have a chance to snap out of that rough streak, now you do have a chance to catch your breath, regroup, and have a pretty solid shot at winning, I'd say, at least 3 or 4 games out of the last 5.
And you also have a pretty good shot to kind of take away and kind of fix some of the numbers that you're seeing on the screen right now, if you're watching the stream, because let's face it, one of the main reasons why Syracuse has performed this badly over this stretch has been Garrett Schrader. There's no more beating around the bush about this, is that Schrader's play just hasn't been up to par from what we even saw earlier this season. And you can't really blame it on the offensive coordinator anymore. Maybe a little bit on Beck as the quarterback coach, but not so much the offensive coordinator, because from what we can see, the plays and the concepts are at least good in theory. It's just that the execution hasn't been great. And when you're a good margin below 50%, 9 for 21, and only thrown for 99 yards, and you get sacked three times. Now, granted, not all of those were his fault, but like, this is not a stat line of a quarterback who would inspire a lot of hope that Syracuse at least had a chance in a couple of these games.
No, and if you want to scroll down just a little bit more, Christian, what really concerns me, well, still in the offense, sorry, still in the rushing, Garrett Schrader, net negative yards. When your mobile QB is in the red, there's a serious problem.
And one of the other things you should know about that is, yes, since sack yardage does get tacked onto the rushing yards, the net is going to look a little weird. But when you take away the sacks, it was three sacks. So he only rushed four times for 12 yards. Mm-hmm. And this is a quarterback who, remember, only a couple of games ago had a career game against Purdue, when he rushed 25 times for 195 yards. Now, granted, yes, the defenses aren't the same. I get that totally. But that goes into another one of the things that continues to befuddle us about, in terms of what you would want to see Syracuse fix during the bye. A lot of it has to do with Schrader's decision-making. And I think we've seen a lot of that kind of on display over the past couple of weeks, is that Schrader's decision-making, particularly in the option play, just hasn't been perhaps the right decisions, you would say.
No, and it really seems like it's not a true RPO. It's really just a straight run option, and he just keeps making the wrong reads, whether it's keep the ball or hand off to Allen, he more often than not is not making the right read.
And then you get to the passing part of the game, which is obviously, I mean, you're a quarterback. You expected it in the college level, at least, to make a pass. And the decision-making that Schrader has had in his passing department hasn't been necessarily the best either, because it feels like, again, like from what we saw, at least in the first half, it seemed like the pass concepts that were being, and the route concepts that were being called upon by Jason Beck, were good in theory. And there were a couple of areas where it seemed like, okay, receivers just weren't getting separation, and that's just a talent deficit. But at the same time, there were other points where it's like, why would Schrader make that throw in the first place? And that in its own is a way that has hampered Syracuse.
Yeah, I would argue maybe a little bit that Schrader needs to get back to throwing the ball over the middle. Now, I understand he doesn't have a Ronnie Gadsden. He doesn't have a healthy Isaiah Jones. But I don't care if you have to put Damian Alford in the slot. Ever since he got to SU, Schrader's strength has been throwing over the middle. He does not have an accurate sideline ball. So you've got to work with what you have and find a way to at least get some action over the middle and not be as – it really comes down to me to being too predictable. Whenever SU was throwing the ball, especially as the game progressed, you just knew if it was a pass play, they were going to the sidelines. They were not going anywhere near the middle of the field.
And we're getting to that point again with Syracuse football, because that was something that was an alarm bell with Syracuse, at least over the past couple of years. I don't remember if this article was last year or the year before, but there was an assistant coach who was talking with The Athletic, who said that Syracuse's offense was very easy to prepare for and was very, very predictable. And we're starting to get to that point with Schrader, because his weaknesses and strengths are still clear and haven't changed that much from year to year. And unfortunately, especially with Gadsden out and, like you said, a non-healthy Isaiah Jones out there, this is a offense that gets very, very one-dimensional in terms of the strengths of the receivers versus the strength of the passer. And it feels like Syracuse is trying to play more towards the strength of the receivers than the strength of the passer. And there's no good option to say, okay, what's the right solution here? Because we've seen Alford out in the slot a couple of times, but he hasn't looked that good in the slot either. In terms of the ball seems to be being put in the right spot, but Alford just hasn't caught it, at least when he's been in the slot over the middle of the field, whether it's in a slant or a dig route. So
yeah, it's the same lack of consistency that he's had the last 3 or 4 years, where he's got the talent to make flashy plays, but it almost seems like it's the easier ones that he has the most trouble with.
Yeah, like one of the catches he made down the sideline, like that was, I mean, he came to as close to mossing a cornerback as you can without actually mossing said cornerback, because he used all of his 6'6" frame to jump over a guy and make a catch. But again, it was a no Keon Coleman one-handed catch, but I mean, close enough. But it feels like at least, I forget if it's the North Carolina or Clemson game, but there were quite a few times this year where Alford has been, the ball has been put in a position for Alford to succeed in making a catch over the middle, and it just hasn't turned out to be the case.
I think that was more UNC. Clemson was Hatcher that was getting targeted a lot, but nothing was working.
And then you go to the third receiver, who's Donovan Brown. You see there at the bottom of your screen right now, who had 0 catches. I'm not sure how many targets he had or not. But that was – he's been the guy that Syracuse has thought might be able to, you know, push into the slot. But that just hasn't worked as well either. And it's tough because we haven't seen enough of Brown in the slot to really – see if it's been Schrader accuracy issues or just Brown issues in general, because it's been a fair share of Schrader accuracy or just inconsistency when targeting Brown, at least over the middle in the slot position.
Yeah, sorry, I was looking up the targets, but yeah, again, the consistency problem. I don't want to repeat myself too much here, but someone has to figure out how to be consistent at something. You can't, it's the money ball scenario where you're not going to straight up replace Aronde Gadsden, but if you can get 2 or 3 different guys that are all good at doing one thing, if you can get Alford to be consistent in winning the 50-50 battles, if you can get Brown to start being that guy off the middle, then together it should at least make the offense a little less predictable, a little more, okay, we know Schrader is either going to hand the ball off, scramble, or chuck it down the sidelines. Excuse me.
Well, at least we know one area that's been consistent. And right now it's really Laquan Allen. I've said that, yes, his stats over the past couple of weeks, especially in the Clemson-UNC game, I think did a disservice to how well he actually played in those games. Because when you look at the stats in that Clemson and UNC games, they're not eye-popping, 14 for 52 against Clemson, 11 for 38 against North Carolina. But then this is really what shows for Allen, 19 rushes, 110 yards gained on the ground. No touchdowns in this game because Syracuse wasn't going to score a touchdown in this game. But this is Laquan Allen who that definitely hasn't shown any of the rust that we've seen that we might have been scared of him showing due to his absence in the offseason due to his issues with the university. But now it feels like Syracuse has got another running back where as long as you get him some space, he'll be in a position to make things happen. And that's at least a good starting point right now for Syracuse.
Yeah, it surprises me a little bit that they haven't tried to use him more. We understand he's not the exact same body type as Sean Tucker. He's not a really that true bell cow, maybe. But he's still clear RB1. I think he should be getting close to 20 touches a game at this point in time where you don't have that. Yet, we hope it develops the last couple of games of the year, but you don't yet have that dependable guy in the receivers core, and especially against FSU, where he was gaining yardage pretty significantly. Oh, there's a Steve Haller.
Okay. There is a Steve Haller, and I'm going to bring him in just a second after you finish up your point, Mike.
But this is, I'm sorry, I lost track there. But with Allen, it seemed like he was, whenever he was handing the ball, he was gaining some momentum. I wish in that scenario, if your passing game isn't working at all, then go heavy on the run and force FSU to start stacking the line a little bit more. Now, of course, like you said, this isn't a game they expected to be in at all. But show something going into the bye week. Show some signs of offensive competency.
Well, one of the things also, and this will be my last point on Allen, is that what we saw a lot in Tucker, especially in his last year with Syracuse, is that they put him out wide a lot and went empty backfield. And I think Allen, he showed it in the Pinstripe Bowl. He does very well as an outside receiver when you put him out there and give him a chance to be an outside receiver. And so if you can give a guy like that a chance to do some work in open space, and he's shown the ability to catch the ball, why not do that? Because he's clearly right now your most dangerous weapon in space. And he actually got some space thanks to the offensive line, at least in the run game. The pass game, not so much. Right, Steve?
I have no idea because I saw zero snaps in this game.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Well, why don't we go to our good friends at PFF to tell you about that? Oh, because I actually haven't looked at these PFF grades.
Neither have I. So I'm curious to see
Petrie's the highest graded. That should tell you what you need to know.
Oh. That is all the telltale signs of not a good start.
Okay, cool. Now, that all being said, is this, is that a function of who he was up against versus who the other side was up against?
This is potentially correct because Jared Verse was lining up on Enrique Cruz's side.
I had a hunch just by those grades that that was an accurate statement. Because
mm-hmm. Mark probably doesn't Jared Verse,
I can't imagine turning out well.
And it probably doesn't surprise you that Enrique Cruz was the lowest rated offensive lineman in this game.
Is that for pass rusher or everything?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. One thing I know I brought up because I was able to hear a chunk of the game on the wonderful FSU broadcast from SiriusXM, which
was, I was going to ask you, Dave, like, how did you not get the Syracuse broadcast even on SiriusXM? It was one of those weird.
Was FSU. I don't know if it was like whatever subscription level I have or whatever it was, but I could not find
it. Are blackouts moving from TV to radio as well now?
Yeah. Yeah, I could not in any way find the Syracuse feed, so I resorted to listening to the color guy repeatedly say "we" when referring to Florida State, and I was like, "Oh, this is just—it's not great, Bob. Not great."
Yeah, some alumni are very rooted in the program more so than others. I guarantee you, some Syracuse football alumni would like to be that rooted into the program to that type of level.
Yeah. The word is like to be.
Exactly. That's why I say like. That's another topic that
I was going to
talk about for another day, though.
That was the thing, is the wheels were turning as to, do we want to go down this road right now or no?
I don't think we want to go through this road right now because we will spend the rest of the podcast talking about that.
Right. I don't know. From what I could hear, I think I heard through like at least the first half, and then spits and spurts through the second half. I would be remiss if I said that I had any desire to continue to listen in the second half after, like, at least if I can see it, I can analyze what's going wrong in the stupidity, but it's still painful. And then listening to it's a whole new level of sadism that I wasn't in for on Saturday.
I can imagine so. Shout out to Thunder Dan Villari, the highest rated offensive player. He had a 74.
Okay. You know, the year of Thunder Dan is a thing. Where did we end up with the rest of the offensive line?
So actually, like, just taking the quick glance, the offensive line as a whole, on the non-Jared Verse side, did pretty well.
Right.
Because Petrie, Bradford, and Chris Bleich all scored above the Mendoza line.
Okay. and against that defensive front, I'll take that all day. Yeah.
And Jonnery Reed wasn't far below at a 58.8 because okay. he had a good 83.2 pass block grade.
Oh, that'll bring you up.
Yeah.
So I guess something I brought up to Kevin earlier in the week that I think can't be stressed enough is the quality of defensive front that we will see in the remaining five games of this schedule. Yes, compared to what we saw in these last three games, falls off a cliff. And that can only be a good thing for us.
But how do we judge Pitt now?
Yes. Pitt is all things at the same time at this point.
Pitt is a team, but they are barely that. That's what I've got at this point.
I thought you were just going to say Pitt is a team. And that was
yeah,
it.
I was like, do you hang that out there?
Yeah. Like,
yeah, lose. Yeah, I don't understand it, and I don't think I ever will. You get
well, Kevin, the
past 4 weeks. What's
Kevin that? Did predict the one bull crap Narduzzi win of the year. So right,
which is usually over us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime we have a good season, it's over us.
Yeah. See 2018.
Yeah. Get trounced by West Virginia, get trounced by UNC, get handed kicked into the next zip code by Virginia Tech, and then beat Louisville. Huh?
Makes sense.
Okay. Welcome to the ACC, folks. This all tracks.
Well, we don't have to worry about divisions next year, so we don't have to go low ACC coastal now all the time.
What did Wake do there this week?
Wake was...
Oh, yeah, they played Clemson relatively... No, that was last week.
That was last week. Were they on a bye this week?
Oh, they got beat down by Virginia Tech.
Oh, congratulations. Virginia Tech is actually doing things. That's a wrong... This is the wrong time for Virginia Tech to get hot.
Yeah, yeah. Who does Virginia Tech have this week? Because hopefully they can bring him back to Earth.
Let's look that up.
They also have a bye. Great.
Oh, so Virginia Tech has a bye going into Thursday night at Lane Stadium. That doesn't bode well for Syracuse at all.
Yeah, most normal teams you'd be like, oh, Syracuse is coming off a bye too. For us, it's like, oh boy, Syracuse is coming off a bye. So for anyone listening who does not know the current track record, I believe Dino's tenure is
three and six.
Yes, it's 3-6.
Although recency bias, they won last year.
Yep, they won last year
against MJ Morris.
What's that?
That was against MJ Morris.
Oh,
details, man.
Well, you know. Yeah.
Who has somehow found his way back into the starting role at NC State, this time not due to injury.
How?
Due to Brennan Armstrong's arm being
completely
gone.
Yeah.
Talk about people who should have gone to the pros.
I still don't understand why he.
You know what I think it is? I think Brennan Armstrong got Tommy DeVito'd.
I could see that. All right.
To an extent,
But if that makes any, if there's any consolation prize for Brennan Armstrong, it shows that if he gets Tommy DeVito'd, he could be the backup quarterback for the New York Giants tonight.
Yeah. Now, you know, and then you're talking about MJ Morris, who did throw for four touchdowns against Marshall 2 weeks ago. Also three interceptions, but we're not going to talk about those.
I get Marshall is one of the better group of five teams out there, but this is still a group of five team.
Well, he followed it up with a 193-yard, one interception performance against Duke. So,
so the Trevor Lawrence line of the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, Trevor Lawrence, who was still good enough to beat the Buffalo Bills last week.
But again, you were playing in London, and this was a Jaguars team that had been in London the week before. So they were already adjusted to London.
You're playing the Jags in their true home. Right. That's kind of warranted.
Yeah, fair enough. That's
So are the Jaguars now Tottenham?
Yes. Which is weird because their owner owns Fulham. So what's going on here?
Yes.
Okay. What is Sahid Khan owns something else too that I can't remember.
That is a good question.
It was
welcome to the part of the podcast where we talk about anything other than Syracuse football, because why would we want to talk about Syracuse football?
AEW, that's what it is. he owns.
Oh, of course it is wrestling. AEW.
Sorry, Kevin, for not knowing that off the top of our heads.
Of course it is AEW. Of course.
Yep. He is the currently the wealthiest person of Pakistani origin, according to Wikipedia, because that's the first paragraph of his Wikipedia. Jaguars at Fulham FC, and that fact is the first two paragraphs. Okay, here we are. We now are a Jaguars and Fulham podcast?
We might be.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we're definitely not a Syracuse podcast. Sorry, FSN.
Yeah. Yeah, do they have any Fulham or Jaguars affiliates? Because we could slide into a role here.
We really should just take over the soccer beat. We'll get to soccer. We'll get the soccer talk later, because there is a thing we need to talk about soccer wise to end this show. Before we get on to the defensive side of the ball here, let's go ahead and take our halftime break to thank our friends at Home Field Apparel. Your one stop shop for all your throwback collegiate apparel, clothing, whatnot. If you go to homefieldapparel.com and shop on the site, you can enter the code NOONS at checkout. NOONS23, in fact, at checkout. That's NUNES23. And get 10% off your very first order. Get all your throwback Syracuse gear or any college of your choice, really. They've got so many brands that you could potentially think of. Even some other brands at other colleges that you would have not known would get a throwback jersey, like North Carolina A&T. So why not head over to homefieldapparel.com and you would use the code NUNES23, NUNES23 at checkout for 10% off your first order.
I haven't acquired any new home field in a while. So their homepage is still the Campbell Fighting Camels, because when you have an option to buy a Campbell Fighting Camels shirt, you should.
That's going to be filled of Los Angeles Anaheim Angel fans who are very appreciative that Zach Neto is now their shortstop.
Deep cuts from collegiate baseball.
Because Campbell decided last year to be, you know, or 2 years ago, was it, where they decided, hey, let's just hit every home run possible.
Yeah, why not?
So, again, talking about literally anything else other than Syracuse football, but let's talk about Syracuse football and eat our vegetables. Let's talk defense. Let's talk pass defense.
Do we have to?
We kind of unfortunately have to.
Are you talking about the fact that Sayer Torrance decommitted from Michigan State and is back on the market? Because he wants to play DB.
He does want to play DB. Maybe. I don't know. Does he have to talk to Chip West now instead of Michael Johnson?
Oh, Michael Johnson. Oh, wow. Apologies if anyone's watching live and I just spammed all of your chats. God, wow. Michael Johnson. I forgot about him.
Yeah. We forget sometimes about the assistant coaches that are on this team.
Well, the turnover really, like, the turnover this offseason threw me for a loop more than most, I think.
Yeah. All right, let's unfortunately, we have to talk about pass defense.
Okay.
I mean, Mike, you're the one who watched this game and actually watched it in detail. I watched it in not great detail, but I kind of watched it and saw that, hey, pass defense still needs a lot of work, even if you are going up against Keon Coleman.
Yeah, not great, Bob. I'll say that my goal, prediction, whatever you want to call it for this game, completely backfired. I wanted SU to be aggressive and try to get to Travis early and trust that they could play man for a couple seconds, and that just did not happen.
I mean, it looks like they were able to, and again, I'm going off PFF grades. It looks like they were able to a degree, but that FSU was able to exploit some matchups.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly Coleman being a matchup with the secondary.
Yeah. and you saw what Travis's game plan was early. because yes, while he waited until he got one-on-one shots to target the sidelines, the routes were designed to attack the Syracuse safeties. And in particular, it was to attack over the middle and really exploit the safety matchup. And they did that to great effect. Mm-hmm. Jason Simmons only graded just above the Mendoza line on coverage with a 60.6. Justin Barron in coverage was down at a 54.8. Elijah Clark is still probably the best safety and one of the better defenders on this roster. And he was the highest graded defender and highest graded coverage defender. So, I mean, but we've known that about Elijah Clark. We know he's probably the best in that secondary. But, you know, Simmons and Barron, like, ugh.
Now, Farmer actually looked pretty good in that relief role.
Yes, but he only played two snaps.
Oh, I was reading that wrong. I was reading 50 snaps. So I'm in the coverage grades. I went deeper, and the column that's normally the snap count is okay, got it.
Yeah.
Disregard that.
I'm still waiting for, you know, when are we gonna see Farmer get more play time? Because you don't just go from the second leading tackler on a Big Ten roster to not seeing that much game time. Even if this deep into the season.
And I don't know, maybe it's they don't want to, I don't know, run them down, wear them out, or maybe he's still carrying a minor knock or something, or there's got to be some sort of something.
If it's a minor knock, it's a minor knock. We did talk to him a couple weeks ago, and he wasn't in a brace or anything.
Okay.
I'm surprised we also didn't see more Jaden Gould in the game also. Yes, he was the lowest rated defender, but he only played for five snaps. So
only two of which were passes.
Exactly. So I'm surprised we didn't see more Jaden Gould in that game either. Because he's looked serviceable enough, at least eye test wise.
Now, and one thing that jumps out of these grades, were they targeting that kind of gap between, especially when we're playing that soft zone, that gap between the linebackers and safeties? Because that really, like, the linebackers look real bad numbers wise in coverage.
So partially, yes. But what they also decided to do was use the wide receiver athleticism and throw seam passes just down the slot.
Gotcha. So,
because the amount of times I heard Bob Wischusen call seam pass from Travis was a lot.
Yeah, do the effectively the football version of utilizing the half space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Mike, you can agree with me, right? Because there was a lot of seam passes over the top, either over the top or line drives right past the safeties.
Yes, definitely.
So Bellamy and Clark held their own.
Bellamy held his own at times, but then other times, not so much.
Okay.
This seemed like his most streaky game so far. Like Christian said, he was okay, but when he missed pretty big.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it was the same with Johnson, but there also that could also be due to safety decisions as well, because when you're left one-on-one on an island with the type of receivers that SU have, you probably expect some safety help. And whenever Travis got a one-on-one matchup down the sideline, he threw that direction.
Yeah. Oh, Jaheim Bell was he a transfer?
Most of FSU's receiving corps transfers, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he came in from one of the other SEC schools. Either way, those folks are going to be bigger than whoever we've got out there, likely better athletes. And it wasn't going to be pretty from the beginning, but I don't know. I don't know what we can. That's the thing with these three games, is I don't know 100% what we can take from them.
And I now I think we can get into that discussion. Is how much do you want to put stock in these three games? Yes, Syracuse did not look good. I know you expect Syracuse to be to have. I know a lot of people would have wanted Syracuse to at least be competitive in these games, but they weren't. And I think, yes, to a degree, that's okay. There are, yes, some worrying things that you would like to see Syracuse fix during the break. But the fact that Syracuse lost these games shouldn't be a red flag to fans. This was always going to be the toughest part of the schedule. And I don't think any person in their right mind, keyword right mind, thinks that Syracuse would get to double-digit wins or escape here with only one or two losses, at least during this stretch of games.
Right. And if you'd have told anyone at the beginning of the season that we were 4-3 at this point in the season,
you would have taken it.
Yeah, everyone would have nodded their heads and said, okay, cool. It's the best we can hope for. And here we are, and people are saying the sky is falling. And I don't know whether it's the look test or what the deal is, but it's disconcerting to see the discourse really fall apart the way it has.
It's definitely the look test. It's definitely the look test of not being kind to Syracuse. Unfortunately, now just given the state of the ACC, you might have to wait until after that Yankee Stadium game to really determine if Syracuse is good or not.
We love the Sickos Committee, don't we?
Yep. And because Virginia Tech is on a roll right now and has all the momentum it needs to dominate a Thursday night primetime game where they excel at, it really comes down to that Yankee Stadium game to really determine the marker for Syracuse.
I mean, this game, like, every sign points to Virginia Tech, so that pretty much means Syracuse is going to win, right?
You would hope.
Yeah, exactly. Also, Mike, I just realized I didn't put two and two together your shirt. I was like, oh, there's a bridge on top of defense. Oh, wait, no, that's supposed to be the top of the dome. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's the roller coaster version of the dome.
Yep. Well, again, it's the Steve is old where I've seen that shirt for decades, but with a different bubble on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not with supporting structures.
Like, now that I understand it, I'm like, oh, that actually looks kind of cool.
Not with civil engineering.
Yeah. But hey, whatever. That's what it looks like now. So that's the dome. Yeah. Virginia Tech is going to be interesting. BC at present is BCing.
Yeah.
So hopefully home on a Friday night, that's not going to cause any issues.
Should it?
Yeah. I mean, what are we looking at 5-4 going into Pittsburgh at Yankee?
At worst.
Yeah.
At the very worst.
Right.
If you can get bowl eligibility by beating Pitt, I think you're fine.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of Syracuse fans who want more from this team, but it's just unreasonable to expect that, especially given where the program is. You've got to build slowly with this program, and especially with the state of college football and college athletics where it's at right now.
Yeah.
People are going to want the world, and it's unreasonable for a program the size of Syracuse to get that right now.
And that's the crux of the problem, or one of the problems, is that I don't think a lot of people that are complaining understand the current state of college football and the current landscape and where Syracuse fits in this landscape.
Because Syracuse is very much at the bottom of the current landscape right now. So Syracuse is, let's put it this way. If Syracuse was in the Pac-12, it'd be in the position where Washington State and Oregon State are right now.
yeah, it might have lucked out and been the Cal and Stanford last night.
It might have been Cal.
But it wasn't going to be in that first flight. 100% wasn't going to be.
Like, sir, ironically, if it was Cal, Syracuse could have got back into this.
Well, but that's the thing.
Mike, do you understand that joke?
I do understand that joke, but we're not talking basketball right now. So
we will in 5 minutes.
I mean, Syracuse has been through this God knows how many times before. Well, by that, I mean two already. The original Big East exodus, which we got left behind on. The original Big East merger that Penn State didn't get included in, and various other things happened to form the state of college football at that present. And then the last, ACC Big merger East. Where we are, yeah. Where we are. And it's like every time people think the Syracuse brand is worth more than it is. And I don't think you'll find any more Syracuse diehards than on this podcast, but also realists of where we sit in the pecking order. And it's not near the top.
The fact that Syracuse is only just now building a football specific facility, and it's not even close to the standards of the football specific facilities that we expect it to be in comparison to the rest of the ACC, should tell you a lot. So to expect Syracuse to immediately slug it out with Clemson and UNC right now, and I think a lot of people are looking at UNC and thinking like, yeah, Syracuse should probably be at that level right now.
You mean the University of North Carolina that is part of the North Carolina state school systems?
Yeah.
That one that has the, effectively the money of a land grant school that's doing what it does. And yeah, we should be right there. 100%.
That's not going to happen. And if you're expecting Syracuse to get double-digit wins, you're expecting Syracuse to be a ranked team every year. And based on the resources that Syracuse has at its disposal, it's just not happening.
It also doesn't help that this is just me being a little nitpicky, I guess. Even with the football project, with the Lolly complex that's going on right now, it is already behind schedule in some ways. They didn't focus on the actual football-specific improvements. They didn't focus on the practical stuff first, let me put it that way. So you're already farther behind than you should be. So, yeah, it's going to take a couple years for Syracuse to really get on the level with most of the rest of the ACC. I don't like it. I'm sure you guys don't like it, but that's where we're at.
A program that does have a specific facility dedicated to it is the basketball programs. And that's partially part of the reason why Syracuse can compete in basketball.
That's part of the reason Syracuse can compete in football.
This is also true.
A discussion for another day, but...
However, this basketball season is going to be interesting because of the new eras and stuff like that. This is a Syracuse program that is going through a lot of transition, and Mike, you were there to at least witness the first steps of that transition. Why don't you take us through Media Day and your thoughts surrounding it?
So I first want to say that just the overall feeling compared to the last two that I experienced at the end of the Boeheim era was completely different. Everyone from Autry to all the players just felt so much more relaxed, and it seemed like they wanted to be there so much more than in past years. And I promise this is not me. This is not the bash Boeheim show, because yes, he had a rough exit. I'm not going into the did he stay too long or any of that stuff, but sorry, Steve, what'd you say?
That's what he's here for.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. There is genuine optimism in this program, and not just coming from the outside, within the program, which is, I think, a really overlooked part of the last couple of years, where the team, whether they wanted to admit it or not, I think the last couple of teams kind of knew they were not the standard of Syracuse basketball that we've been used to seeing for a long time. this group knows that they have the talent to go back to that standard. It's what Autry keeps preaching, going back to the orange standard and putting a couple more bands. I forget who said it. It was one of the players saying the next couple of years, getting back to putting more banners on the walls inside the Metal Center, meaning more tournament appearances. So the expectations of this group with themselves and what everyone believes everyone else on the team can do. It's a very tight group, especially the six guys, the freshmen from last year that are now sophomores, who all decide to come back and still may end up being, as Jim Boeheim said, one of his best recruiting classes ever. I'm trying to be the optimist here, Christian. I can't overstate how excited I am to actually watch Syracuse basketball. That should be fun again. And this is coming from someone who doesn't have as deep of a connection as the two of you do. This is coming from somebody who came here for school, didn't have a ton of background with Syracuse before, but now this feels like the team that I have been, that if I came to school here 5 or 6 years earlier, would have been the team then, like the team that so many groups of so many classes came through and saw. That's what this team feels like.
Remember, you're also talking to a Syracuse fan who didn't really, before he went to Syracuse University, wasn't invested that much into Syracuse sports at all. And really the first Syracuse sport that he watched in earnest in terms of, okay, I'm going to this school, let me watch this school now and figure out the team I'm rooting for, happened to be the Syracuse-Duke game in 2013.
Mm. Yeah, for some reason, I thought this was going towards the Villanova football game, because I know you've talked
about that. We do not talk about
that. Yeah, that game didn't exist, remember.
No, but
Syracuse, Iowa, yeah. 2008 does not exist
either. Yeah, but basketball-wise, the first game that I like really focused on as a Syracuse fan happened to be the Syracuse-Duke game of 2013, and I think a lot of basketball fans remember that game. Mm-hmm. And it was the one at the Dome, not the one at the glorified high school gymnasium.
The gym that's smaller than my local D3 school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with the new era, in the immortal words of one Anakin Skywalker, this is where the fun begins. Because I'm as the Steve is old spokesperson here, in my brain, it's been a long time coming to get back to what this seems to feel like. And you're right. There's been a fresh and palpable, I don't know if it's relaxation or there's a change in demeanor around the program, it seems. And it feels good to see.
And I think for at least this program, we don't want to use eye test that much with football, but I think we have to with this basketball program, just based on like the strength of the teams that Syracuse plays throughout its schedule. There isn't an easy quote unquote stretch for Syracuse at all in its schedule right now. And so I think if Syracuse plays at least close against its opponents in the Maui Invitational, I think that's where people will get excited about the Syracuse team.
Yeah, interestingly enough, we did also find out that Autry did not make this out-of-conference schedule. It was already decided when he got here, so one last gift from Jim, I guess.
Jim willingly accepted a game in South Dakota?
Willingly is that's probably its own animal.
That is a good point.
Is there a Denny's there?
Do we make the Denny's joke? And yes, there is. There is. We somebody brought it up before in one of the random comment sections.
Oh, that's glorious. So when official tip off is what? 2 weeks from Monday?
November 6th, I think.
November 6th, New Hampshire. That's what it is.
Yeah. God, you know we're diehard Syracuse basketball fans when we're guessing when tip off is.
Yeah, yeah. You know we're coming off the Florida State game when we're guessing when tip-off is. New Hampshire, Canisius, Colgate, the usual upstate New York and New England tour. Maui, that's not in Maui.
I mean, for good reason. So,
like, oh yeah, valid, 100% valid. Which is okay. That's still listed as Lahaina Civic Center on the.
Close enough.
Yeah. Louisiana. Why did I read Louisiana State?
Because it's listed as Louisiana State on the schedule page and not LSU.
In my brain, it like was going to ULL and like Louisiana Lafayette or something. But yeah, LSU in the ACC-SEC Challenge. That should be fun. That is not a game including Joe Girard, as he did not opt to attend there. And instead, we will be seeing him later in the season, right?
Indeed, indeed. That is Syracuse's senior day.
Oh, really?
Wait, no. That's the game in Clemson is senior day. Our senior day is a Tuesday night against Virginia Tech.
Oh, right.
Because that
the reason why we would say this is because we were wondering when this schedule came out what would be like the big weekend game that Syracuse would promote. And it feels like it's going to be that Clemson game. Because Syracuse plays Duke early in the season when the students aren't on campus. And the UNC game is...
Duke is a road game anyway.
That's true, yes. Yeah, and the UNC game that's at home is on a Tuesday.
Yeah, so the big your options are like, Wake? No, that's away.
Yeah, no, the your options weekend are basically just Clemson or Notre Dame at this point.
Yeah. Wow, that sucks.
Yes. You know what also you can promote on weekends against Clemson? Soccer games on ESPN.
Ah, there you go. I was like, is that where he's going? Okay.
Yes, indeed, indeed, indeed.
Oh, before we hit there, do they promote the Notre Dame as one last time to pack the dome before they change the seating and all that? I mean, if they were smart, they probably would, but...
There's also supposed to be a Boeheim ceremony. We don't know if it'll happen, but Wild Hacks wanted that last year.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's get to the reason why you're all here. Soccer talk.
Absolutely.
The Syracuse is still a football school?
Yes. Well, if you count the second result on the weekend and not the first.
Yeah, we don't talk about the first.
There was a first?
No.
Are you guys sure Syracuse soccer played another game this week?
No.
There were no teams from Philadelphia that showed up at Syracuse Soccer Stadium. It's fine.
Syracuse did not lose 2-1 to Temple during the week. It didn't happen.
A 1-5-4 Temple team?
Yeah, that was not Temple's second win of the season. That didn't happen.
Also, I still, like, if you want to get into a tactical breakdown of that game, I can bitch and moan for days because it was bad. But
why don't you do a tactical breakdown of center backs taking free kicks?
That's what we saw
today.
Oh, really? Who was taking free kicks today?
Steve, do you actually not know the score of what happened today or what happened today?
I saw the 1-1 draw.
The goal was from a Booster Schoberg free kick from just outside the box.
Oh.
I suggest you go look at that clip now on Twitter. In fact, what I'm going to do is go to Twitter, pull up that clip, and show it on stream because that goal was just ridiculous.
Oh, I'm going to wait for it on stream then. For the Temple game, I will just complain that we had zero midfield presence whatsoever. It reminded me of the old Bob Bradley empty bucket, and everything was a cross into no one, and it was really, really disconcerting to watch. Rant over. Glad they were able to turn around against a ranked Clemson team. But yeah, Temple had what, two shots total and scored two goals? Maybe three shots and scored two goals?
I think they had three. But yeah. Still.
Syracuse had 12 shots and 12 corners and got nothing out of it. Well, a goal.
For those who are listening on your podcast platform of choice, I'm about to show the goal on our live stream right now. Again, if you are joining our live stream Sundays at 8 p.m., go to Twitch. Disloyal Idiots YouTube and on Twitter. Steve is going to look at Booster Schoberg, and you see where this ball is just inside the D. And this is, yes, you're saying this correctly. This is Booster Schoberg, Syracuse center back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's nice. That That's a center back?
This is your center back.
Okay. So why haven't we been using Booster like that for years? that's almost as pretty as you remember last year Kachevsky had that one from like 21 out.
Yes.
That's like that same feeling. Like that's just I'm downright impressed. Bravo, Booster. And that was up here, correct?
That was indeed up here. That was a national broadcast as well on ESPNU.
Oh, nice. And Syracuse Clemson always seems to be a stupidly good game. I don't know how that always happens.
Yep.
And I started covering them.
And that was a 78th minute equalizer as well.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since 2013, I think there's only been two games. And this is a team we normally face multiple times a year because we always run into them in either the NCAAs or the ACC tournament.
Yeah.
I think there's only been two games that have been decided by more than a goal. So,
and one of those was last year.
Right. Yeah. And they've been just consistently good games every year. Even when one team is down, it's just like, okay, yep, somehow this is a good match. And hopefully they can continue to get right against Yale on Wednesday.
This is a Syracuse team that's going to be interesting heading into at least the postseason talk, because you expect them to tumble down the rankings after the loss to Temple. So do they still have a good enough resume to, especially with all the draws on their schedule, do they still have a good enough resume to at least challenge for an at-large bid?
I would think they do. You know, what's the field? 24 or 32?
Something field's like that.
Pretty large.
Yeah.
First round bye, so it's got to be 21 or 24. Or 28. I don't know, whatever. We're not math scholars here. Usually if you're in the top 25, you'll be able to get an at-large. Like, there's enough slots out there for a solid amount of at-large berths. Like, if they can close out Yale, NC State, BC, and like win, that puts them what, 9-3-4. And most of with their strength of schedule, I don't see how they wouldn't make an at-large, especially if they get one in the ACC tournament. Now, if they falter a little down the stretch, like lose or draw one of those and then lose in the first round, then you might be on thin ice. But I think they're just by strength of schedule. I mean, you scroll up and it's like, all right, they played number 20 Penn State. Cornell was ranked when they played them. They drew against Louisville, 20 Wake Forest.
I think it comes down to how much you factor those draws into the equation, because there's been so many draws for this Syracuse team.
There has, but they've got a big, you know, top 10 road win against North Carolina. Or sorry, 13 road win against North Carolina.
True, did forget about that.
Right before the Temple game, which makes total sense.
A lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah. One thing, I don't know if either of you have heard. Where's Jonah Leibold?
Mike, you're going to have to be the detective as the man on campus to figure that out.
Because, like, he hasn't gotten minutes since the...
Like, it has to be injury, right? Because there's no way you leave him out of the squad.
Right. I mean, he's your perfect width on the left. Like, I don't know. Like him and Nate Edwards running the flanks would add a whole different dimension to this team.
Mike, I think you know who to ask, and both of us know our mutual friend who to ask.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'll get Phil on it.
So yeah, either way, good to see Wickham. You know, apparently had another decent game.
It looks like Syracuse might have some goalie stability, and also shows how important Russell Shealy was at the end of last year.
Yeah. Yep.
So I was a big Lucas Donhauer fan. I was a really big fan of how he played.
Yeah.
And I thought he should have deserved, at least at the beginning of the year, I thought he was going to be the starting keeper instead of Shealy. But I was gladly proven wrong last year.
I was going to say, down the stretch, that one kind of, that argument went out the window.
Yeah. Down the stretch, it definitely went out the window.
Yeah, Mac's definitely Mac knows what he's doing here. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. And it seems his latest goalkeeper switch is at least at this point paying off right now.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so, absolutely.
Because so we're carrying four keepers right now.
Oh, that's normal. What are you talking about?
I mean, we're carrying 35 kids, so it's like, yeah. Yeah, things are good.
Hey, one football team knows how to get depth.
And knows how to use the transfer portal. Weird.
That's probably a discussion for next week when we're going to be talking about the Syracuse playing the Fighting Buys.
Mm, very true.
But it's definitely a discussion we can table for next week as we kind of had the dust to settle around the crazy first half of the season to Syracuse football. This has been your Disloyal Idiots podcast this week for years, all your new Syracuse Orange related. I'd like to thank Steve and Mike for joining me. Steve hopping in a little bit late, but still was here nonetheless. Andy still somewhere out in the world on the internet.
I promise you he exists somewhere. He has responded to texts. We just don't know.
We have received signs of life. But again, thank you all so much for listening to the Disloyal Idiots podcast. If you're watching along on Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter on our live stream Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern time, thank you so much for watching along. Make sure you hit a subscribe or a follow on your viewing platform of choice. And if you're listening on your podcast platform of choice, you know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever it may be, Megaphone, Stitcher, why don't you go ahead and rate, review, subscribe, leave a comment so we can trick the algorithm into expanding the Ottoman Empire. We'll be back again next week, Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Again, the following day on your podcast platform of choice. Until then, guys, go Orange.
Go Orange.
Go Orange.